Good afternoon and welcome to Cure Talks. This is Priya Menon, your host, joining you from India. And today we are discussing CAR T cell therapy treatment for cancer. As we all know, FDA has approved the first gene therapy treatment in the US. And our guest for today is a man who led the team behind it all, Dr. Carl June, a pioneer and specialist in T-cell biology and lymphocyte activation at the University of Pennsylvania. The new therapy uses body's genetically engineered immune system to find and kill cancer cells. In the coming hour, we'll be discussing the nuances of this therapy. On today's panel, we have patient advocates Gary Peterson, Jack Aiello, and Mike Scott from our Cure Talks community. Just brief you on the format that we'll be following today. I will start with a few questions, and then Gary will begin the patient panel discussion with Jack and Mike. Towards the end of the talk, we will be taking in questions from the audience. The dial-in to ask your question live is 718-664-6574. I repeat, 718-664-6574. This number has been posted on curetalks.com webpage as well, and we will be repeating this number before we begin the QA. You can also post your question in the comments section of the Cure Talks page or email me, priya@trialix.com, with the same. I once again welcome everyone to today's episode of Cure Talks. Moving on to the discussion, Dr. June, it's such a pleasure to have you here. Welcome. To start off, can you talk a bit about how your research with CAR T cells began and whether your background as a Navy physician has had anything to do with it?
Well, thank you very much, Priya. So I began to study as a physician and then oncology and in the early 1980s, and at that point, the new emerging therapy was a bone marrow transplant. And in the early days of transplant, they thought that it would work because they could give what are called super lethal doses of chemotherapy. So chemotherapy so intense that it would kill you unless you were rescued with bone marrow from a donor, usually a brother or a sister. And and in fact, that was the first time that sometimes leukemia could be cured. And but it was only later when they did a set of identical twins and they gave them the same chemotherapy as they gave transplants who had a donor was a brother or sister. And what they found out was that it only worked with increased survival if you did not have an identical twin as a donor. So what that means now in retrospect, we can is that the differences in the immune system between the brother or sister who was a donor are what led to the long-term remissions in leukemia. And if you had no differences, meaning an identical twin, it wasn't as good. The only benefit you got was a high-dose chemotherapy. So the problem back in the early 1980s is that the procedure often had very severe side effect called graft versus host disease, where the immune system of the brother or sister would attack the recipient patient. And so I began working on how to get around that. And that ended up being, you know, could we do the same benefits of a bone marrow transplant, but not have to do the transplant and actually use your own immune system as the weapon? And over about 25 or 30 years now, that's now culminated in an FDA-approved therapy called CAR T cells. So that's, you know, I started off because of that, you know, learning how to grow T cells was the key from the patient. And then, you know, I was in the Navy because of the reason we wanted that bone marrow transplants was it's been recently shown we had, you know, was for radiation casualties, as could happen, for instance, in things like when Chernobyl or the Fukushima reactor accidents in Japan. What you die from that radiation exposure is bone marrow failure, and it can be treated with a bone marrow transplant. So in the early 1980s, the Navy paid for my education so that I could learn how to do bone marrow transplants. And then if we ever had an issue, say, with a Navy reactor on a submarine, we would have a potential way to treat the sailors. And so that's how I started on that initial research. But then when I began later after in the later almost early 1990s, what happened was is we had the collapse of the Cold War, and really the reactors and so on became a low priority issue. And the only research I could do in the Navy was on HIV and malaria, which are infectious diseases. So the first use we had of giving T-cells to patients were actually patients who had HIV and AIDS. And so we showed that we could take the T-cells out from a patient who had AIDS, grow them up in the lab with the technology that we developed, and then give them back to the patient, so the same patient. And their T-cell counts got much better, so their immune system started to work, whereas it had been failing. And then, so that was throughout the 1990s. And then I left, retired from the Navy, and went to the University of Pennsylvania in 1999. And we began using the same approach, but in patients who had leukemia. And so we used all the technologies we'd learned in HIV and then transferred that to cancer patients. And that's led now, our first patient was treated in 2010, and then now FDA approval just in August of 2017. So in a nutshell, that's how it happened.
Yes. You just mentioned having worked with HIV and engineering the T cells. Can you talk a little bit more about your work with HIV and why HIV was ideal for this engineering of the genes?
Yeah. You know, one thing about this is it shows that if you can work in different fields, seemingly disparate fields, like an infection and cancer, you can sometimes have lessons or low-hanging fruit that applies in one field to help solve a problem in the other field. So in the cancer field, the problem was, how to make T-cells attack your own cancer but not attack your body. And we didn't have an efficient way to genetically alter those T-cells. And it turns out HIV has evolved to do exactly that. It infects people and it goes into their immune system, into T cells. But the natural HIV virus, as people know, destroys T cells eventually. And so the field, a number of investigators over the years developed HIV and modified it so it would be a tool to insert genes into T cells rather than kill them. So what they did was basically gut the virus of the genes and material that would allow the virus to kill T cells, but retain the ability to insert new genes into T cells. And so we were the group to first test that in humans. In 2006, we treated patients who had late stage HIV with their own T cells, but then using this modified form of HIV, which we call lentivirus, to insert a new gene into their T cells. And then that's what we ended up using in cancer patients because it works with very high efficiency and has been very safe. In hundreds of patients, we've never had a side effect, from this virus.
That's great. So this is a very common question that we have come across as to how this new therapy is different from the standard chemotherapy.
It's radically different. It's for one thing, the therapies that we have had until just recently other than surgery, and if you can't cut it out, that has meant usually it's either surgery or radiation or a combination. And both of those are non-specific therapies, and they work by killing cells, but they also kill normal cells, and which leads to the side effects. And with an immune therapy that's precisely targeted at just the cancer cells, there aren't those so-called off-target effects. Off-target effects are when the therapy is killing cells, but it's not helping you get better. And so chemotherapy, as most people know, has many side effects from, symptoms such as nausea or vomiting to very severe issues that can involve liver failure, heart failure, and, bloody diarrhea and so on. Those are off-target effects, and they actually don't help you get better from the tumor. And an on-target effect, then, is it's side effects related to actually when you're killing the tumor. And so those, happen when the patient is actually benefiting from the therapy. And, the first one we found with our CAR T cells, and CAR, by the way, stands for chimeric antigen receptor. And they're basically that means it's a T cell that's been modified. The word chimera is used because it's from the Greek, a chimeric beast, which is a fusion of two different kinds of animals, in the Greek mythology. So what we have is a chimeric T cell. The T cell is a fusion of two cells in the natural immune system, which is the B cell. And B cells normally make antibodies, which we use in our defense against viruses and infections. And the T cell normally just kills cells but does not make antibodies. So a CAR T cell takes the best worlds, really, of a T cell and a B cell. And the T cell can be a killer cell of tumor cells, but it also now has antibodies in it. Then that's how we can direct it to kill tumor cells. And the first on-target effect we found from CAR T cells was very high fevers. And in our first adults, they had fevers of 106 degrees that would last for several days, and there was no infection. And we now call this cytokine release syndrome, or CRS. And it only happens in patients who are getting better. The fever happens when the tumor is killing, when the CAR T cells are killing the tumor cells. And it's a violent reaction. It can last up to a week. We now have ways to manage it. And we've learned a lot about CRS. So as I mentioned, it has high fever. The fevers are usually higher in children than in adults, probably because the children's immune system is more robust. And we've also learned that if you treat patients earlier when they don't have as much tumor, there's less CRS. So our first patients, the first three that we reported, you know, that were treated in 2010 were adults, and they had, by the scans and so on that were done, they had between 5 and 7 pounds of tumor each, just massive loads of tumor. And when their tumor got ablated by the CAR T cells, it was violent. They had fevers that lasted, in one case, 2 weeks until the tumor was all gone. But then the patients recovered, and they're completely fine. There's no long-term side effects from that. So that's an on-target side effect, is cytokine release syndrome. It can be severe in patients with high tumor loads. Up to one-third of the patients go to the ICU, but the fatality rate from this is less than 1%. In the trial that Novartis did to get FDA approval of the CAR T cells for leukemia for patients between age 3 and 25, 48% of the patients had cytokine release syndrome, but there were no fatalities.
Thank you, Dr. Joan. Before I hand over to Gary to start with the patient discussion, can you share some Eureka moments that was part of this journey, this T-cell therapy journey? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we started off first with just, you know, could we, you know, and what we're doing really, this kind of CAR T-cell therapy, is it's a new form of transfusion medicine. So the first successful transfusions in humans were blood cells. And, you know, and for that to happen, people, they had to develop the typing of the blood system, so the so-called ABO antigens, and to find out, you know, who could be a blood donor and so on. And now what we're doing really is T-cell, you know, because CAR T-cells are a form of blood cells. We're doing T-cell infusions. And so our first eureka was when we actually treated those AIDS patients. We made CAR T-cells for HIV. And we gave them a single dose of CAR T cells, and, you know, we saw immediately their T cell counts went up. In many cases, they doubled and went to normal levels. And so that was evidence that the CAR T cells could go into the patients and stay and actually survive, you know, and start dividing. And so that was what we were hoping for, and it worked better than we thought it would. But in a really curious twist, you know, the FDA has a rule in the U.S. that patients treated with gene transfer technologies, so this is a form of gene therapy because the cells are genetically modified, and in this case, the patients got CAR T cells for their HIV, starting in 1997, and the FDA has a rule that each patient needs to be followed for up to 15 years and tested each year to make sure that it's been safe and that there's been no toxic effects from the genetic engineering. So we analyzed in 2012 all the patients we had treated back in 1997 and to 2000, and there were 40 patients, and we analyzed them because the FDA had a rule that if you could show that the gene transfer was gone, in other words, had gone away from the patient, then we would no longer have to have the expense of following the patient every year. So we analyzed all our patients from the samples in this freezer, and were astonished to find that, in fact, more than a decade later, they were all still engrafted and had these CAR T cells at very stable levels. It was, no one expected that. In the previous trials with transfused T cells like that, they had not ever lasted longer than a week. And we found that the half-life of these T cells is more than 10 years in patients with HIV. So it suggested for the first time that you could make a living drug. You could genetically modify someone's T cells and give them back, and they would then be there on patrol for potentially the rest of that patient's life so that they could act in a way like a vaccine. So that was the first amazing aha moment.
A living drug, yeah, that's really exciting.
Yeah, and then the second major one was really in 2010 when we treated the first patients with these CAR T cells. This one was called CTLA-19 or CART-19 because it targets it's a CAR T cell against a molecule called CD19 on leukemia cells. And when we treated those patients, we didn't know what would happen. All previous CAR cell trials in patients with cancer had failed and not shown any effects. And we had all three patients had remarkable remissions. And it was so unexpected that patient one, who we reported in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2011, patient one, when the bone marrow biopsy came back with no leukemia, I didn't believe it. I said, you know, that basically they must have missed it. And so leukemia is in the bone marrow. Usually they biopsy part of the pelvis. And I just said, biopsy the other side. And so we did the first biopsy on day 28, and it was negative. And then the biopsy on day 31 from the other side came back also normal with no leukemia. So that was astonishing, and we had that repeated then many other times.
This is so exciting. Awesome results. So with that, I will hand it over to Gary now to begin with the patient panel. Yes, Gary, you're on air.
Yes, can you hear me? I've changed over to my cell phone.
Okay. Yes, very well.
Okay, it's fantastic. Dr. Jim, first, I'd like to just tell you how excited I was, and I think most of the people on this call and anybody who's, you know, who I've talked to about having you on this program. And it's because for a lot of us, you know, especially people with myeloma like myself, in the end, we're going to end up with no new options. And you've provided us with the next best chance after all our options are over, and maybe even better than that, you know, that if we come earlier in the course of the disease.
Yeah.
But I did want to say that earlier when we had a discussion, just briefly, you mentioned something that just struck my heart, and that was that you recently had a reunion with 40 children. 40 children who were beyond any help, and those 40 children and their parents are with you alive and well. And if anything, I'm sure those parents think of you as a medical messiah. And at a minimum, your medicine's Einstein. So thank you so much for all that you do.
Well, it was, thank you. It was that event was, I just can't tell you how, grateful I am to be able to see this happen. Most people who work hard on a scientific problem or medical problem for a long time, oftentimes don't see the benefit that may happen years later. But to see these children and young adults, it was incredible. And, and the good news is they actually look like, from what we can tell, most of them are probably cured, you know, because we have now sensitive assays for leukemia, and we can't find any leukemia in these patients after the CAR T cells. Now, that doesn't mean they couldn't get leukemia again, but at least from what we can say now is it's going to be a rare event. Most of them, have gone on now, and they just have normal lives. So it's quite remarkable. There is one side effect that's ongoing, and which I should describe, which is, in this case, I mentioned the CD19 molecule that's on these leukemia cells. It's also on normal B cells. And so as long as these patients have these CAR T cells on patrol in them, their normal B cells also get killed. And and that turns out that's causes no side effects as long as one gets gamma globulin, which is something often given to people who are going to an area where there's a lot of infectious disease. Gamma globulin is pooled antibodies that the Red Cross makes. And so that's it shows that the CAR T cells are still working, because if we intentionally kill the CAR T cells in the patients, then they start making B cells again. And so in future generations of CAR T cells, we want to make them controllable by the physicians and patients so that we could turn them on or off and then have the B cells come back.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I can imagine you've made some parents very, very thankful, and certainly made that made you very much aware of what you've done. So anyway, Dr. June, I thank you again, and thanks for giving terminal patients a new last chance. And my question is, CD19 happens to be the antigen that you can attack for acute lymphoblastic leukemia. My question is, do you believe, that there is a target on all cancers, that it's just a matter of finding it? And I ask that question because if it's a matter of finding it, then it's just a matter of time. If it doesn't exist, then darn.
Yeah. So I have. I think I can explain in terms of people can understand, because it's really pretty simple. So in the case of T cells, they evolved to kill cells that have new DNA in them. So that means a virally infected cell, for instance. The reason we have T cells, they evolved to protect us against viruses. And a virus is an infection of a cell. It could be, one in your lungs, and that would be flu. And sometimes it makes the molecule RNA, the virus, or other times it's DNA. But in either case, the T cells can sense that it has altered its DNA or RNA in the cell, and then the T cell will kill it. And that's how we get over the flu. It's how we get over chickenpox. Or mono, for instance, is the T cells kill those infected cells. And a tumor, we now know, is a mutation which changes the DNA in the patient's tumor cell. And T cells can sense that and can kill the tumor cells, because it's, in a way, very similar to an infection. The problem is usually that tumor cell remains very much like a normal cell from the immune system's point of view, and the T cell doesn't attack it vigorously enough. And so that's where the CAR T technology comes into play. We can make very strong recognition or binding of the T cell to the tumor cell, and then it kills without fail. I mean, that's what's really exciting. Now, so there are two approaches to solve the problem you brought up, because right now the big challenge to the field is, for instance, solid tumors and other tumors other than CD19 positive bone marrow tumors. And so I have several arguments why I am quite confident that's going to happen, where we will have successful engineered T cell therapies for all tumors. So one is that there are many different antigens or molecules.
Can I say they and then...
Yeah, but you have to understand, what I don't know is when.
Mm.
The time scale of this coming out is, and when it comes out, so I can say in mice right now, the principle's already proven. And but there are two kinds of T-cell therapy. There are the CAR T-cells that we've talked about, where it's an antibody fused into a T-cell. And then there are also T-cells given, and we've done this at the University of Pennsylvania, and there are companies doing this, where new T-cell receptors are put in. So T-cell receptors identify intracellular, the new proteins, the DNA mutations that I was mentioning, and they can tell inside the cell that it's been altered. And so they kill in the same way that a CAR T-cell does, but they use a different recognition system than the antibody system. And so we know that T cells can kill solid tumors when they see these mutated antigens through the T cell receptors. That's the basis of so-called TIL therapy. And TIL stands for tumor infiltrating lymphocyte, where lymphocyte really is a scientific name for T cell. So TIL therapy has been used for a long time for metastatic melanoma. And metastatic melanoma is a tumor where chemotherapy has never been effective. And now we have, you know, revolution in that. It's the first solid tumor that's where up to 50% of the patients now have long-term remissions from immunotherapy, a tumor completely refractory to chemotherapy. And it's been done with either so-called checkpoint therapies, where antibodies are given to prevent the immune system from shutting off this anti-tumor response. And it's also been done with TIL cell therapy, so that those are adoptively transferred. So the patient's own T cells taken out of a tumor, they're grown up in the lab, and then given back to the patient. Now, so what I think is that in every patient, there will be combinations of targets that will be either the T cell receptor target or CAR targets. And there's one more nuance to understand. So right now we have a CAR T cell that is always on, if you will. It's like a light switch and it's always on, and that CAR is always on the surface. And if the T cell runs into a cell that has that CD19 target, it basically shoots before asking. Okay, mm-hmm. It's in military terms, it's just there is no question asked, it just kills. Now, it's possible using transistor logic, and engineers will know about so-called Boolean gates, the way transitions work. They can do logic, and the cell, for instance, or it can ask, just as computers do on an initial logic questions, it can do and or not gating. So it's possible to make a CAR T cell. So it can say, does a target have two targets, say target A and B? And if it has both of those targets, it kills. And you can find two targets on every tumor cell where no two targets like that are on normal cells. That's the really important aspect. On normal cells, they may have target A or target B, but you can always, with the technologies we have, you can identify unique combinations that are on the tumor cell and not on the any normal cell found in the body, and then they become tumor-specific killers. So that Boolean logic gating, and we're calling them, and there's some people call them smart CARs, because they have to, but they can be rewired so that they only kill when there's a certain combination of targets on the tumor cell, and then that's going to have to be made so that it's specific and not on normal cells. So that principle's already been shown in petri dishes and in mice, and it needs to be worked out now in patients with tumors. Yeah, and the last part of that equation that makes me optimistic is so you could always ask, well, can T cells really kill solid tumors like pancreatic cancer and brain cancer, where there's been no real progress for decades and decades? And the answer is, if we make CAR T cells in the lab from a patient and take their tumor cells out from a biopsy, we can show in the petri dish that the CAR T cells can kill those tumor cells. So the issue is making them so the CAR T cells also don't kill the normal cells in the patient as well. And those are the approaches we just discussed.
Well, it sounds so exciting. It's certainly made me feel a lot better, you know, that there's going to be more solutions to the end game than what we're confronted with right now if you have myeloma.
Yeah, it's, you know, in the case of myeloma, you know, it's the most common bone marrow malignancy in adults. And as you said, I mean, it's been really not curable. What's happened is we've got a series of targeted therapies now that are much better than the chemotherapy we had in the past. But myeloma has a relentless property where it seems to always come back. And it may be that there's something called a myeloma stem cell, which is resistant to all known forms of therapies, and then that's what leads to these inevitable recurrences. And so with the immune system, it may be possible to target both the myeloma stem cell as well as the, you know, the common myeloma tumor cell that causes all the problems with myeloma. So
that's a good part of the shoot before you ask, isn't it?
Yeah, yep. So we need to target the myeloma stem cell as well as, you know, the mature myeloma cell that causes all the bone damage.
Okay. One last question, and you had talked about the way that you use the HIV virus in order to introduce, you know, this antigen. And we hear a lot about CRISPR, and that CRISPR is better than the existing systems, and that it's far more accurate. And my assumption is that there must be some benefits then to that as far as the cost and also, you know, your ability to make it do what you want it to do and to not have as many, say, off-target issues. But could you explain, you know, is CRISPR something that you will be using in the future or and not use the HIV? Or how does that work into this whole program?
So we all, it's just an example of now how basic research has led now at the cusp of ways where we think we can actually cure diseases in a variety, even inherited diseases, which was unthinkable in the past. So this is an area, so-called genetic editing is the ability to change the code in DNA. Our DNA is about 3 × 10⁻⁹, or 3 billion different base pairs of this DNA. And sometimes, you know, a mistake in just one of those can lead to even lethal diseases or can cause cancer. So you can have congenital, you know, diseases that you inherit, or you can have acquired ones which happen, for instance, and lead to cancer through mutations after you're born. And so genetic editing offers the ability to repair these, and it can be done in two forms, in a basic terms, one being in the laboratory, if you can take the cells out, genetically edit them, and then return them. So that could be in bone marrow-derived cells like T cells. It happens to be that today the first ever in vivo gene editing was reported by a team led by Sangamo, and they used a gene editing technology called zinc finger nucleases, and they did, you know, injected it into a patient who had a congenital disease in order to attempt to repair the gene. So it's too early to know if that's going to work, but in a laboratory in mice, it does. So when you actually look down in the different technologies, they alter DNA sequences. And we're fortunate to have a number of tools. The first one ever used in patients was the zinc finger nuclease, and we actually did that beginning in 2009 in patients with HIV. And we edited their T cells to make them so that the HIV virus could no longer infect their T cells. But that was done in a laboratory, much like our CAR T cell engineering. This is going to be complementary to and will not replace technologies like using lentiviral vectors or HIV to introduce genes. So there's one which is technology which can bring in new genes to the cell, and then there's another which can change target genes and to achieve a benefit in the patient. And they're really very complementary. And you mentioned the CRISPR technology, which uses an enzyme derived from bacteria called Cas9, which will it'll cut in the DNA, and you can target it with amazing precision. It's truly the needle in the haystack. So of these 3 × 10⁻⁹, or 3 billion different base pairs in our DNA, you can target which one you want to change with this CRISPR-Cas9 system. And it's real advantage over the previous gene editing technologies, like zinc finger nucleases, is it's more rapid in the laboratory to test many different targets. And so it's very flexible. And, you know, I am quite certain that we're going to see many of these technologies used both for in the laboratory with, for instance, bone marrow cells are altered and then give it back to the patients, or in certain tissues, they'll be directly injected, and those areas will be modified as desired by systems like CRISPR-Cas9.
Okay, well, fantastic. And I now am totally convinced that you are a special, special person. And that from now on, I'm going to start calling you Dr. Carl Einstein, Jr.
No, just you have to understand, I mean, this is, immunotherapy has been an idea around for more than 100 years, you know, to try to treat cancers. And so the ideas are not new. I mean, there was a surgeon in New York City in the late 1980s and, 1880s and 1890s, injecting bacteria and products from bacteria into patients' tumors because he thought he could activate the immune system. And in fact, he did. Some patients were cured when they were deliberately infected with bacteria. And we now know in retrospect that that was, you know, it was activating the immune system, but it never became FDA approved because it was not reproducible enough, and it was also quite dangerous. So the idea to use the immune system has been an old one, but we didn't have initially the tools that were, you know, good enough to make it work. And now we have, through all, you know, years and years of very, basic research on the immune system and ways to modify genes. And in fact, you know, in the entire human genome sequencing effort has had a major benefit in this cancer immunotherapy. So these old ideas now are able to actually be done now because we have better tools to get the job done.
Well, thank you. Jack, Iola, are you on the line?
I am. This has been a great discussion. Dr. June, it's really nice to meet you over the phone. I've actually met you once before, a couple years ago at a Leukemia and Lymphoma Society meeting when you introduced Emily Whitehead and her parents.
Yeah. Thank you, Jack. Thanks for working with LLS. You know, when you have an out-of-the-box therapy, one thing we've learned is that standard science often does not fund that research when it's out of the box. And I was unable to get initially, you know, funding from our National Cancer Institute. They funded our development with the HIV virus that I described earlier. But when we wanted to do clinical trials in patients with leukemia, I was unable to get that funding. And it was only through the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society that we were able to start that trial.
That's what I understand. In the trial that you discussed, I know that you reconfigured the T cells to recognize the CD19, and yet I also think you gave that treatment to some myeloma patients, and I had heard that some of the patients, myeloma patients, responded, and yet I never understood why, because we don't really have CD19 as a marker on our myeloma cells, I don't think. But I was curious if that's true, did they respond, and what's their condition today?
So I can, I'm going to go back and describe what I think is this stem cell, you know, that there's a cancer stem cell, and that myeloma cells may be in a way like a chameleon and change the molecules on their surface at different times during their lifespan. And so we have data, and there's a scientist at Johns Hopkins named William Matsui, who's shown over the years that there are normal B cells that do have CD19 that appear to be the precursor to the mature myeloma cell. So we, as you mentioned, we treated the first patient on a trial just testing our CD19 CAR with in myeloma. And she had a complete remission, and she's doing very well now 4 years after treatment. And she had had 10 different kinds of therapy before that had never worked. When we looked at her myeloma, only about 2% of the myeloma cells had CD19. And yet all our myeloma cells went away when we treated her with a CD19 CARs. And so we've now done a trial, and about 2 out of 10 patients had quite strong responses, to the CD19 CAR, but 80% of the patients didn't. And there's another molecule that we are testing, and other companies are now testing for myeloma, called BCMA. And BCMA stands for B-cell maturation antigen. And we're having responses quite routinely in patients using CARs that target BCMA. So with this is what I'm going to describe now has not yet been published, but we took 10 consecutive patients with myeloma and tested their cells in a petri dish, and then put them into an assay to look, did we eradicate all the myeloma cells, even the long-term so-called stem cells. And when we treated with the CD19 CAR, it eradicated about 20% of the myeloma patients, you know, where all the cells were killed, that had long-term, ability to cause myeloma. And with BCMA, it was about 70%. And when we gave a combination of CARs targeting CD19 and BCMA, we had 10 out of 10 eradications in the laboratory. So we're really excited about that, and we're just beginning a trial with no one yet treated, where we're going to give them the combination of CD19 and BCMA CARs. So if you will, it would be a cocktail of CARs. And that may become common, I think, where many tumors will be treated with a combination in order to eradicate every single last tumor cell.
So that was actually my next question, and that is it possible to build a CAR T to recognize more than one antigen? But maybe through the Boolean logic, or maybe just through having separate CAR T development, you're able to do that.
Yeah, it's a very exciting area of research, and there are a number of ways technically to do this. You know, I was mentioning this Boolean logic, where you could have a CAR target A or B or C, for instance, maybe three different CARs in the same T cell. So we now have technology to do that. And there's a trial that just opened up at Stanford targeting two molecules for leukemia. It's targeting CD19 and at the same time CD22. And I think we'll have the same thing in myeloma. I mean, as I just described, but using BCMA and CD19. And I think we're just at the surface. We're just scratching the surface of, next generation therapies that will be both more potent, have higher cure rates, and then less toxic.
And then I also hear in the future that this technology, CAR T technology, might be off the shelf or might be replaced by something called BiTE technology. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, so those are two different concepts. So off the shelf, I mentioned that, CAR cell therapy really is a form of transfusion medicine. And instead of red cells or platelets, which are routinely transfused, this is T cells. And an off-the-shelf CAR T cell would be where we could, where it wouldn't be the patient's own T cells. And if that could happen, it would make the process much simpler. Because right now it's a logistically intense effort where, the manufacturing process is unlike anything in the pharmaceutical industry, really, where it starts with a patient. They donate the T cells in a process called where the blood is taken out by either just blood donation or apheresis machine. The cells are then shipped to the manufacturing plant, and then about 2 weeks later, they're returned back. They're now frozen, and then the cells, CAR T cells, then are given to the patient by about a 5-minute infusion. So the cells are just thawed in a water bath that is at the same temperature, a body temperature, so 98.6 Fahrenheit. When the cells are all thawed out, the CAR T cells are just infused over a period of about 5 minutes. So that's how the current FDA-approved CAR T cells are given to patients. An off-the-shelf one would be more like a standard pharmaceutical product where it could be made in large batches. And what it requires then is that we have something like we do in the blood cell transfusion where we can have universal donors. So it happens to be that I'm an O-negative donor, and I can donate blood to anyone because of that. About 15% of patients have this O, you know, the blood type of O-negative. We don't have that for T cells unless you have an identical twin. So if you're an identical twin, you're lucky you've got someone else who can be an off-the-shelf donor for you. But for most people, that's not true. And we need to be able to genetically modify the donor T cells so that they don't do two things. So one is, I mentioned with bone marrow transplants, you get graft versus host disease. That's where the incoming bone marrow attacks the patient. And T cells are what do that. So if I would take someone off the street, make CAR T cells, and infuse them in a patient, the patient would later get graft versus host disease from the infused CAR T cells. So we have to remove that with genetic editing, the ability of the off-the-shelf cells to cause that graft versus host disease. And then the other problem happens is that the patient themselves will reject the incoming CAR T cells, and that's called host versus graft. So it's the other way around, the patient's immune system. And so then these off-the-shelf T cells need to also not have that happen. There are trials now testing these off-the-shelf cells, and very early stage trials are being done in London at the Great Ormond Street Hospital for infants with leukemia. And in New York City, there's a collaboration between two biotechs and pharma, Cellectis, Servier, and Pfizer are working on making off-the-shelf T cells for patients with leukemia. So I think in the end we'll have, standard oncology has had what we call induction chemotherapy and then maintenance therapy oftentimes. And I think we may well have two kinds of CAR T cells in the future. One that's the kind that can last for the rest of your life in your body, and that would be your own cells manufactured. And there will probably be, I think, an off-the-shelf form of CAR T cells that could be at any community hospital and then given right away, and then later probably for long-term. I don't think the off-the-shelf T cells are likely to last lifelong in a patient, unlike, when you're using your own T cells. So I think we'll have both forms of induction and consolidation with these kinds of engineered T cells.
Thank you, Jack. We're just running a bit over time here. So, Mike, you're on air. Please ask your questions, and then we can just open it up for the audience.
Hi, Dr. June. I'm not going to ask you any questions because I want to make sure we have time for people who are on the phone to ask you questions. But I did want to tell you a very brief story. In 1973, I met a man called Barry Marshall on the way to a meeting in Belgium just after he had shown that a bacteria caused ulcers.
Uh-huh.
I published that paper. I told him at the time he would get a Nobel Prize. And I'm telling you now, I hope you and your team get a Nobel Prize for this work.
Wow, thank you. I did notice...
I know how rare it is that something like this happens.
Yeah, well, I've been very blessed. I have an amazing team that I've worked with for, many of the people I'm working with, I've been working with for more than 20 years. But I noticed you work, on prostate cancer.
Right.
And I wanted just to say that... We have just treated our second patient for patients who have metastatic hormone-resistant prostate cancer with CAR T cells.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's a trial sponsored by the Prostate Cancer Foundation, and so it's a very early stage, pilot trial to understand if we have a safe target and if we can make any headway in these patients right now who have no options.
Right. I did hear a presentation you gave a few years ago at the Prostate Cancer Foundation meeting in Washington, so I have been optimistic ever since.
Yeah, so it's finally happening, so we're excited about that, but, we just don't know how long that road's going to be in patients with solid tumors. It's a complex problem. Okay. Well,
but
thank
I really want to give people on the line the chance to ask questions, so I will waive my right to ask any others.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Mike. We are opening up the discussion for the audience. I'm repeating the number to dial in. If you have a question for Dr. June, please use 718-664-6574 to dial in. Press 1 on your keypad, and we will bring you on air to ask your questions. We already have quite a few listeners dialed in, Dr. June. I'll just bring the first one online. Hi, Dana. Please ask your question.
Thanks, Priya. Thanks so much. Hi, Dr. June.
I did
check in a little bit late, so I have a few questions which you may have already answered, so please feel free to just say already answered, and I'll listen to the transcript when it comes out. I did want to make a comment that I was excited to hear about that combo CAR-T trial for myeloma, CD19 and BCMA, because that was one of my questions. I was going to ask you which was the most promising target for myeloma, was it BCMA or CD19, and the CD19 did confuse me because I know most myeloma is CD19 negative, but I did hear you say it, and I did, and I'm going to listen to that again, so thank you for that. If a patient responds to CAR-T but begins to lose the response and shows signs of relapse, could they get a CAR-T cell boost similar to what is done with allo
yes.
transplantation?
Yes, in short, there are a number of strategies, both in the lab and then just starting to look at that. If boosting CAR T cells and either by reinfusing, and maybe we need to have maintenance infusion, and that's being explored in some early stage trials. There's a trial in Seattle where they're vaccinating patients to try to boost up the CAR T cells. You know, with cells, so they're vaccinated with CD19 antigen, and then that would be a way then, without having to reinfuse the CAR T cells, where potentially one could maintain the effect in those patients who lose effective CAR T cell engraftment.
Okay, and do you eventually, this is for myeloma patients, because I'm a smoldering myeloma patient, so very interested in the emerging information. Do you eventually envision using CAR T earlier in the disease? Newly diagnosed myeloma, even smoldering myeloma, before the disease seems to take traction?
So I hope we would love to be able to move it up to the benign, you know, the so-called MGUS.
Uh-huh.
And that would be more cost-effective. And that trial is going to begin in leukemia, where children, rather than going, right now the standard of care for leukemia is 2 or 3 years of chemotherapy and or radiation. And a trial is going to begin where they're going to be, you know, people with poor prognostic, you know, newly diagnosed leukemia are going to be randomized to receive standard of care or CAR T cells.
Okay.
And I am, you know, so we first need to get FDA approval of CAR T cells for, you know, advanced myeloma. And then I think those conversations will happen in trials to test it more and more upfront rather than as a salvage.
Would patients need to be treatment naive to be able to benefit from something like that? I would presume in the smoldering and MGUS stage we already are. But let's say for a newly diagnosed myeloma patient.
So, you know, we first have to use FDA-approved drugs, and then, you know, before we can go to experimental settings. But I think all we know about immunology says that the earlier it's used, it works better. And that's because the tumor is less complex, and because the immune system is more intact, and so the CAR T cells work better than after many rounds of, for instance, all the steroids and chemotherapy and myeloma. It's a matter of how fast, can we do this clinically and ethically? We first need to show, you know, that these, you know, small numbers of patients so far, but the, you know, trials look very good in advanced myeloma with CAR T cells. And then how would we move that up front, you know, or where, you know, and all those, you know, the myeloma teams will be doing those trials. It's just going to take longer than we would wish, because when you treat people in early stage disease, it takes a lot longer to prove it works. You know, it was really easy in our leukemia trials because those patients literally had only weeks to live. And so it didn't take very long to show that it worked. And as we move earlier up front in myeloma, where, as you know, there can be very long-term survival, that becomes it's going to take more than a decade to get there.
Thank you, Dana. The next caller on our line is Williams. Williams, you're unmuted. Please ask your question. Williams, you can ask your question. Okay, let's move on to the next caller. Richard, you're unmuted. Please ask your question. Richard Davis, we have unmuted you. Okay, we can ask your question now.
Yeah, hi. Hello, Dr. June. This is a question going back to your comments on prostate cancer. In layman's terms, how does the CAR-T technology differ from the Provenge Sipuleucel T technology that's been approved and used in prostate cancer now for 2 or 3 years? I recognize one difference is that the SIP-T uses the patient's own cells, but what else is similar and what else is different?
So they're very different. Richard, so Provenge or Sipuleucel T is it's a vaccine, and it's made of cells that are used to vaccinate, which are dendritic cells. And so dendritic cells are what start an immune response. And so in this case, it is the patient's own cells. They're collected by apheresis, which is the same way we collect T cells for CAR T cells therapy. And then, you know, they're modified in the lab over a period of about 4 days and then given back to the patient for the vaccine, the Provenge. Now, CAR T cells, for a vaccine, you have to have the patient develop an immune response, and then later they're protected. That's why right now we should be getting flu vaccines to protect us in January, you know, if you live in the United States, you know, from when we will have flu epidemics. So it takes time for the immune response to occur. With CAR T cells, it's called active immunotherapy. They start working the minute they're infused, and you don't have to wait. And T cells live for years and years. I mentioned more than a 10-year half-life with our initial CAR T cell trials. Dendritic cells only live 3 or 4 days, and then what they need is to then trigger a long-lasting immune response in the patient. So they're probably complementary therapies. I mean, they're very different approaches, one being a vaccine approach and one being active therapy. And so that's the main difference, using different cells, dendritic cells in one case versus T cells in the other that are long-lived.
We've got a lot of questions on our site. I'd like to cover something that we have not already discussed, Dr. June. Is this treatment offered for 55 years and older?
Oh, yes. There's... So immunotherapy can work in very old patients, in fact, where chemotherapy is usually not given. So one of the first three patients we treated, one was 77 at the time. It came out in the press about a year and a half ago. Jimmy Carter, at age 90 or 91, got melanoma that spread to his brain, and he was treated with the immunotherapy, not with CAR T cells, but with checkpoint therapy. And what's said out in the press has been he's had a remarkable response. So anyway, 55 is common, in older than 55 is very common in our trials.
There's a couple of questions and we can wrap up. I think we're almost at the end of the time. When is this treatment becoming available for AML?
Well, that's a great question. AML is the standard really treatment for AML hasn't changed since I was in medical school in the 1970s. So there are trials now. There's one beginning at the National Cancer Institute in Bethesda in 2018 with a CAR T-cell trial targeting CD33. There's another one targeting CD123 for AML, which is open at City of Hope in Los Angeles and will be open at the University of Pennsylvania. And we will also have a trial targeting CD33 for AML at the University of Pennsylvania in 2018.
Thank you, doctor. The last question, I have stage 4 colon cancer. Is this something that can treat this?
So the answer is in the long term, yes, but not presently. There are very few trials for colon cancer now, and they require the use of T-cell receptors rather than CARs, and I described some of that earlier. If the Boolean gating, you know, making the so-called smart CARs that I described earlier can be done, then CAR T cells will also be used for colon cancer. But at this point, all the CAR T cell targets tested so far would also cause colitis, you know, and target the normal colon.
Thank you, Doctor. CAR T cell therapy, as we have all heard, is a game changer in cancer treatment and offers hope to people that probably the cure is around the corner. So we have heard how the new therapy works and wish Dr. June and his team all the very best in continuing with CAR T cell research, and hopefully we'll have a new breakthrough soon. Thank you very much, Dr. June, for your time, and it has been an exhaustively informative session for all of us here. Gary, Jack, and Mike, thank you for your participation and the great questions, and a big thank you to the wonderful audience. This talk will be made available on CureTalk's website, along with its transcript, question answers, and summaries. Please visit curetalks.com for details on upcoming talks. Thank you, everyone. Have a great evening.
Thank you, Priya.
Thank you, Dr. June. You are remarkable.
Thank you.